This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. If you're anything like us, you don't just book trips, you run the numbers first. Is this flight actually a deal? Is that premium card pulling its weight? Should I use points here or save them for something better? Well, that's exactly what Smart Travel dives into. They break down which travel cards actually earn their keep and which ones just look impressive in your wallet. They'll walk you through the quick math for knowing when to pay with points versus cash, and they explain how to get real value from your rewards instead of settling for that tiny reward button at checkout. It's thoughtful, research-backed travel finance delivered in a way that feels approachable and actually useful the next time you're about to hit purchase. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Hey everyone, at the time of this episode's release, we're currently on a one-month honeymoon, exploring Hong Kong, Fiji, and New Zealand. And while we're taking a short break from recording new episodes, we didn't want to go completely silent. So over the next few weeks, we're releasing a few special conversations we've had on other amazing podcasts with permission from the hosts. These are some of our favorite interviews where we go deep on our travel philosophy, our favorite redemptions, and how we use points and miles to create unforgettable experiences. In this episode, I join Ross Alcorn, host of the World Travel Made Easy podcast. You may recall Ross was back on episode 89 of our show, where he talked about how he built a point strategy over time to save him and his wife almost $20,000 on their honeymoon. Well, on Ross's show, I break down how my then-fiancé, Taryn, and I manage credit cards across multiple businesses, maximize redemptions, and know exactly when it makes sense to pay a 3% fee for points. We also dive into the math behind our luxury travel, including how we booked the Maldives and Emirates first class for a fraction of the cost. And while we're out honeymooning, make sure to follow us on Instagram to catch all the behind-the-scenes moments, from lie-flat business class seats to luxury lounges and incredible places you might just want to add to your own travel list.
Welcome back to another episode of World Travel Made Easy with Itinerary Boss. On this week's episode, I'm excited to have DeAndre Koch. He is the host of Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, as well as the CEO of Truist City Wealth Management and Bold to Go. Excited to have him on today. Hey, DeAndre, how's it going?
Ross, feeling great. Thanks for having me today.
Of course, of course. I got to repay the favor. I know we recorded a couple weeks back on your podcast and was able to share some valuable tips. And, you know, for the people that I work with who are the business owners, people who are trying to get more into points and miles, why not bring someone on who is an expert, not only on the points and miles standpoint, but being a business owner, being a financial advisor, so you can answer, you know, your journey, all the questions that I get and all that. But don't want to sell you short on your background. Would love to hear a little bit more about what you got going on with the podcast, as well as, you know, wealth management and Bold to Go.
Yeah, absolutely. So a few things about me is I've been a financial advisor. I own my own practice, my own firm, Truist City Wealth Management, had it for about 15 years now, based out here in Virginia, Virginia Beach specifically. And we have a team at this point. The practice has grown. There's about seven of us in total. So we serve clients all over the country. Full personal financial planning, wealth management, investment strategies, et cetera, et cetera. I know this isn't a finance podcast, so I'm not going to go down the well there. But what I will say is I've got a knack for being analytical, and I also love to travel. So that played really well together, because what was happening earlier in my practice, probably I'd say maybe 10-ish years ago, is clients would start asking me specifically kind of what cards should I get for travel, for business, for different things like that. And I, instead of just saying, oh, like you should just get this or that, I ended up doing some deep diving and research myself. And that's how I found the points and miles game, because I started telling people about cards like the Chase Sapphire Reserve when it came out, or the business cards, all those different things. And I started utilizing those same cards myself. And that ended up really propelling my own ability to travel, which was absolutely great. And so eventually what ended up happening as I was going on all these amazing trips, and friends and people that would follow, you know, me on just Facebook or whatever it may be, were like, oh man, what's the next trip you're going on? Where are you going next? Right. I know the same thing happened to you as well, right? Because you were traveling, people were like, how are you doing this? And I started out then the brand back in 2019 called Boldly Go. And it was just really a brand about getting out there and experiencing the world. And it was really more so, honestly, kind of travel influencer style, because I was traveling for years with a drone and taking pictures and videography. And I honestly wasn't big into like just social media and following social media individuals. So I really didn't realize that being an influencer was a thing. And so it wasn't until like 2019, I was like, oh wait, you mean I can make money on travel and pictures and videos and grow a following that way? Less make money, more grow the following side. And that's where Boldly Go started. And eventually that evolved more into, you know, let me share my expertise with points and miles with those that follow me, because so they can see, hey, how am I getting to Thailand? How am I getting to these different places? And that's when I decided to really branch out. So now we have this combination of, while I'm still running the practice, and that's my day-to-day, and I'm very busy with that, I still love to travel, and when we travel, my fiance and I still catalog everything with videos, drone shots, I've got a high-powered camera, all those things, and so we do a mixture of travel content, points and miles content as well, and that also culminated in the start of the podcast, because, hey, why not share some of our strategies, share how we do it, because I know, like you, people keep asking you how you do it, so why not share how we do it?
I love it. And I love how you bundled it all together just based on your experience, right? And before, you know, unpack that a little bit, if you aren't following DeAndre, go follow Boldly Go on Instagram. I will say he puts out, the content is amazing. It just, how you got all the drone shots, everything, it's aspirational, and then kind of breaking it down. So I love following you guys just from a points, from a funny perspective. So definitely go follow him there. But from the fact that, you know, you're analytical from a financial advisor standpoint, like you also can see things where it's not just, oh, this is, I'm going to get this credit card because it gets the most points. You are, again, as a advising your clients, you're thinking through, okay, how is this going to benefit your personal situation? It's not a one size fits all. And then being able to share that knowledge, I think, is really cool. And yeah, I feel like for every person who gets into travel, points and miles, starting a business, it was some sort of origin story that they just started it. They didn't realize, oh my gosh, if I start creating content, like I can also monetize this, but also help people, which is the most important piece. And that's awesome that you were able to do that. And yeah, it's always just the same questions are getting asked. So it's sharing all of that information and just being able to dissect that. And that's when I started listening to your podcast more and more, I was like, okay, this guy is definitely my speed, because he thinks at a more analytical standpoint, not only on points and miles, but real estate investing, stock investing, and like bringing it all together. And I think that's the biggest thing that we can help our clients out is, they're usually business owners. They're trying to think from it, not just, you know, how do I get a huge cents per point redemption, but how do I use what I'm already spending to take my family on the right vacation? And, you know, also how does that fit into my overall financial plan? So we love what you did there, how you grew the brand, but we'd love to learn a little bit more about, like, what are some best practices that you and your fiance put into place just around points and miles?
Yeah, absolutely. And before I get there, I want to add a bit of a caveat as well, because I think a lot of people that are hearing about the points and miles space, and I know you've experienced this over the years, they initially think it's kind of a scam, right? They're like, there's no way like this can possibly work this way. And a lot of the feedback that I got early on is, okay, well, you're a financial advisor, so you actually are able to bring a little bit more credibility to this industry, which was a goal of mine. And there's a lot of people like yourself, a lot of people that we follow in this industry that are smarter than us when it comes to points and miles, and they know this on like the highest level possible, right? But there's always that person that's going to be suspect, if you want to call it that. Well, fun fact, originally my podcast, I wanted to be called The Wandering Advisor, because I was going to plan to do like points and miles and financial advising kind of all in the same podcast. But here's the thing, as a financial advisor, I'm very, very restricted on what I can say and do because of all the licenses, credentials, and designations that I hold. So I actually was advised basically, hey, let's not talk the financial side, but you can talk the travel and points and miles side, which is why that's the majority of our podcast focus. So I don't get into the financial planning side. I don't act as a fiduciary or give financial advice through the podcast. But I say all that to say that, you know, the ability to create some credibility for those that are possibly doubtful is huge. But then also, like, on our website, every year I update, like, and show my personal credit score on our website, on our points and miles guide, on our blog. And I'll post it even randomly throughout the year, because I have, I don't know, at this point, I think I have like 15, 16, 17 cards, maybe more. And last I checked just a couple of days ago, my credit score is an 860, right? So by being able to create some legitimacy, some transparency around it, and I don't say this to brag, but I'm a name that you can Google and see who I am from my practice standpoint and those type of things. My goal was also to create some legitimacy to this space of points and miles, because so many people think, oh, it can't be that good, or you're scamming the credit card companies or whatever it may be. And you and I both know that's the farthest from the truth. You have to have a strong sense of financial responsibility to do this at the highest level.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I love what you do with the credit score and putting that on your website. I might have to take that here.
Go for it.
When we do updates to the website, because it's very true though. I mean, that's what's funny is a lot of the times when I ask people just based out of curiosity, hey, like, who told you what credit card to get? Oh, it was, sometimes it's their CPA or sometimes it is their tax advisor, but sometimes they aren't as in tune with the points and miles space. They're just like, hey, this is what I have. Go get this. So I think the fact that you have all those credentials and you already know a lot about this, it just brings another level of credibility. And nowadays, I mean, I think we're with everything that's going on with AI, we're becoming more into a trust recession, where the power of being able to trust someone, whether it's someone that you know. And I just had Eric Creekmore, he's the founder of There, the app, and it's all about relationship capital, leveraging those networks. And like, that's how he built his whole career. He's actually good friends with Travel Like Tommy, one of your buddies who came on your podcast. Nice. But it's just cool. It's such a small world. And the fact that, right, you're building up that trust longer term is only going, and with having the podcast, right? Like, I learned something new from you every week. It's like, you're going to just continue to build your brand. So no, I applaud you. And I think it's awesome, man. So yeah, no, appreciate you bringing that credibility to the space.
Absolutely. And I likewise, I mean, listening to your podcast as well, right? We learn from each other. It's like iron sharpens iron. And I think that's how we all can grow.
Exactly. So let's peel back the onion just around, right? How are you and your fiance, you know, what are some best practices just in your personal life that you guys are doing from a daily expense standpoint?
So interestingly enough, it was great. My fiance Taryn, when we first started dating, like literally a month into dating, right, she grew up, her father is like, hey, credit cards are bad. And he's actually a financial advisor of like 40 maybe plus years, right? But he always said, hey, like, credit cards, like, kind of stay away from them. And for a lot of people, right, credit cards can, if you don't use them responsibly, can ruin your credit. So I completely understand, right, kind of the cautious tale that you'd want to bestow on your children. But after explaining to her, I think it was probably date 2 or 3, the value of the Amex Platinum card, she's like, done, I'm in. Got it. So she got the Platinum card, used it in the Centurion Lounge, one of our first trips that we took like a month into dating. And so she was a very willing, what we call player 2 in the game. And that was just from being a month into dating specifically. And since then, we have a strategy where, so me personally, I've got, of course, my personal side. Then I've got 3 different businesses. So I've got the wealth management practice, I've got a real estate investment property business, and then I've got the Boldly Go brand as well. So I've got 3 businesses. And then my fiance Taryn has her personal side as well as a career transition consulting business also. And through the years that we've been together now almost 4 years and getting married here in just a couple months, we have a strategy of, okay, we're using specific cards as our daily drivers. So at this point for me now, which is a little bit unique, my daily driver card for a lot of restaurants and dining out, well, the same thing, but for dining out, groceries, those things, I'm actually using the Citi Strata Premier, because it's so much harder to earn Citi points, but you get 3x in those categories. For Taryn, her daily driver is the Capital One Venture X, because it's just easy, 2x on everything. And then we maximize our signup bonuses and welcome offers on the different business cards. So on a kind of a yearly basis, typically I'm opening up a new card probably quarterly or so, maybe a fifth one in there for the year. And usually most of those are going to be business cards because of the fact that, you know, they don't show up on your personal credit report, the majority of them. They don't affect your Chase 524 status, all of that. And then Taryn, she usually opens up somewhere probably between 2 and 3 for the year. But this year, because we have a lot of wedding expenses, she's opened up some additional ones, especially on the business side that has got the higher spend requirements to get the larger signup bonuses. And at the end of the day, it's just maximizing, putting every single possible dollar we can on credit cards so that we can get as much value as we possibly can out of it. And literally anything I can put on a credit card, even if there's a transaction fee behind it, I understand the math, and I know even if there's a 3% charge, which we can get into, especially on some of the real estate stuff, but even if there's a 3% charge, I know if I'm using the right card, I'm going to get more value out of my points than that transaction fee is going to cause. And so I really just make sure that everything I can do on a daily basis, I'm putting on some sort of card. And although I said I've got 17 plus cards, as I mentioned, I have a couple daily drivers. So I only have about 5 cards in my wallet. Now, there's a personal card, and then I have to have cards for 2 of my businesses at least in there. So that's probably why I have a little bit more than I probably most people would need, especially if they don't own a business. But that just makes sure that if I have a transaction in person for one of my businesses, I always have that card on me. And that's kind of the high level. Happy to dig down a little bit deeper, but that's kind of the high level approach.
Yeah, no, I love that strategy. And I think it's, you hit on a couple points that a lot of people ask about. It's like, well, you know, how many cards are you opening? And, you know, how do you juggle all this? And which one do you use here and there? And yes, there's a lot of great tools, but I'm the same way, right? My Capital One Venture is the Venture X wasn't out when I first got it. And right now, just for my card stack, it doesn't make sense to go get that one because I have the Reserve. But for all travel and dining out, I use the Reserve, and then I use my Capital One. That's really honestly it, besides, you know, a couple just $12 a month bills to write, continue just to have good credit. But yeah, I think once you start to unpack just the business side of things, and that's important for people to know, because a lot of times it's when they're just getting started out or they open a new business, hey, what's this going to do to my personal credit? And I see, and I talk to so many business owners that are still using debit cards, and it's kind of crazy. I mean, and some are using debit cards on things that they only can pay in cash with that, which I think is an advanced strategy that we'll definitely get into, because being able to have those fees with the 3% versus what you're getting out of it in points is huge. But opening those, understanding which of those from a business standpoint, and also strategically outlining them for, you know, every quarter, I think is good. So a couple things just to unpack that I think we can go a little bit deeper on is, you know, what's kind of, walk me through like the 3% transaction fee, just like, are there specific platforms that you use, as well as, you know, when you're going through that, why, you know, why are you deciding to do that piece? And then also, why is it quarterly? Like, is there a strategy behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, for the longest time, my daily driver was the Chase Sapphire Reserve as well. And for probably my first 5 years in the points and miles, I really only used the Chase Sapphire Reserve and the Chase Freedom Unlimited card. That way I was getting 1.5x on everything that the Reserve didn't give me 3x for, and then eventually added in the Amex Platinum. So I started very simple, and then probably about 5 years ago, I just went really down the rabbit hole. I was like, hey, I'm going in on this strategy. And I moved to the city now because I have so many Chase points and just got the Chase Business Reserve, and my fiance Taryn just got the Chase Business Reserve. Like, we Chase points, yeah, can come pretty easily to us. But to answer your question on the kind of the thought process around the transaction fee, now, most of the time when I'm referring to that transaction fee, I even mean just when you get a opportunity to pay something online, it might say, hey, you know, additional credit card fee or whatever it may be, just kind of built in, right? Again, it's a no-brainer for me. Now, the scenarios for like a business owner where they might have a vendor payment or something like that, that usually needs to be in cash, and they have the opportunity to pay credit, and they're like, hey, I'm not going to pay 3%, even if it's a high charge. Let's say you're about to charge $10,000. I love to be using $10,000 because it's just easy math, right? $10,000. 3% transaction fee, that means you're going to pay $300 in fees just to charge $10,000. Most people aren't going to want to do that. Now, there's a few things. If you're a business owner, that additional $300 fee is typically almost always a write-off on its own, right? So there's some taxation benefits there specifically. But let's get into the math as to how this can make sense. If you're using a card that gets you 3x on this type of transaction, which will likely not be the case, but let's just say for simple math, I'm going to go kind of layered into this. So for simple math, 3x, so you're getting 30,000 points on your transaction plus the fee, right? That 30,000 points, if those points are worth at least 1 cent per point, well, that's going to equal out or negate the 3% transaction fee just on its own, right? So $10,000 charge, 3x points, basically should be the same minimally value of paying $300 on the credit card. But most people aren't going to have a card that's going to get them 3x on whatever their vendor fees are. So that means they're probably going to have a card that gets them somewhere between 1 to 2x on that transaction. So this is where understanding the points and miles game, listening to your podcast and being educated on how this world works can be very important. Because if you can get, and for me, I always kind of teach in my podcast, ideally about 2x of value for your points, meaning when you redeem your points, not when you earn them, but when you redeem your points, if you can at least get 2 cents of value per point, the math is almost always going to work out in your favor. So here's what I mean. So if you have a $10,000 charge and you're only getting 1.5x using a card, only getting 1.5x, well, then what's happening is you have this 3% fee still. So you've paid $300 for this transaction and you've only earned, instead of 30,000 points, now you've earned 15,000 points. Well, here's the thing. If you can get more than 2 cents of value, and I know like you and I, when we redeem our points, we're going for not just two, we're going for 4, 5, 10 cents of value per point. Well, if I can turn 15,000 points into 300, 400, 600, $1,000 worth of travel value, it's worth it for me to pay $300 to turn 15,000 points into $1,000. So that's why I'm not worried about the transaction fee, because I know with my average redemption, so last year for 2024, my average redemption for the year with all the trips we did, points we redeemed, was 5.79 cents, right? So almost 6 cents of value I'm getting per point. So I'm 2xing that transaction fee in general. So I'm getting way more value out of my points than I'm paying out with the transaction fee. So for me, points are so much more valuable than even cash back or whatever it may be, because I know how to extrapolate the value out of it, if that makes sense.
It does. No. And I love that breakdown, because you kept it simple with just round numbers of 10 grand, 300, and then breaking that down. And I think that's where people just get hung up, like, oh, I don't want to pay that fee, because they don't realize the value of what the actual point is. And they just think, oh, a lot of business owners I talk to, or I redeem it, you know, for cash, you know, at the end of the year, or statement credits or gift cards. And they kind of are aligning it with, that's what I'm, you know, that's the value I'm actually getting from it. But then at the same time, it's like, well, if you're paying with your debit card, you're also not getting any of those points. And that's the challenge. And, you know, that's where the struggle is where people are only paying on debit cards, not even credit cards, with no fees. It's like, that's where, you know, there's definitely misalignment. So being able to break that down, share that, is very helpful. And that's just on the transaction fees. Maybe you're having to pay, I just had to redo my registration for my car, right? There's a credit card, like anything online. So that's an example. But then when you start to get more into, and a lot of the people in our network are real estate investors. And, you know, when we talk to them, this is a strategy we've used, just from, you know, if it's paying GCs, things like that, just, you know, if they only take cash, and they don't take card, and we're actually in something where a property just had some water damage, unfortunately. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, if you're listening to this and you're a real estate investor, it isn't buy the property and go drink a margarita on the beach. It's worth it. But we're having to go through that, and, you know, now building out, okay, who's going to do the flooring? Who's going to do the drywall? Like, I'm already thinking, okay, how much is this going to cost? And what card do I want to get that I'm going to easily hit that minimum spend, that's going to have those transferable points? And even if they take that 3% fee, I know I'm getting that welcome offer that's going to be even more. So I think that's one thing too. If you do know you have a big expense coming up too, like you were saying, like strategically outlining that and opening one quarterly, it may not have to be like that, but thinking through like, okay, here's what I have coming up in the next year and aligning those card spends, that's then where you can even like make more points by getting those welcome offers on top of that, right, 10 grand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the thing that you always have to clarify when someone's listening to this is you're, for the most part, Chase has kind of changed the rule on this a little bit, so I'll get to that. But for the most part, you're never going to get that 2x of value from using the travel Amex travel portal, the Citi travel portal, Capital One, redeeming for statement credits, as you said, the gift cards, Amazon points. You're never going to see the value that way. So if that's the only way you're willing to use your points, and you're like, hey, I'm not really trying to figure out the rest of this, which if that's the case, I don't know why you're listening to our podcast, but if that's your mentality, like the math will never work out in your favor in that way. The exception to that rule is now with Chase, they have what's called the edit. And with the edit, they have a points boost basically where you can actually use your Chase points through the Chase portal and get up to 2x of value redemption. So it can actually work out in some cases there. But prior to that, that was never the case up until just a couple months ago. So the really to get your value, if you're wondering how am how are you averaging, you know, 4 or 5 plus cents per point on redemption value, it's because we're directly transferring our points to Hyatt hotels, to Emirates Airlines, to Qatar Q Suites. That's how we're able to get so much value out of our points. And that's how you have to play the game essentially to get the most value.
Yeah, no, 100%. You bring up a great point with the points boost, because I had a lot of friends when, you know, they came out with a newer higher annual fee on the reserve or text me like, oh my gosh, I'm going to take this down. And my first thought was, okay, like, let's take a step back and see what I'm going to use and what I'm not. And how does that negate the statement credit for the annual fee? And, you know, I looked at them like, okay, Apple Music, StubHub and DoorDash, like, that right there, plus the $300 annual travel credit, and also now getting 4 times the points, like that's fine. And it saves me. I don't have to go transition to a new card, ask them to go down. So it's like, you know, but understanding those things before you open something is very, very key. And we have a friend who just opened one. She was worried about annual fees. I sent her a 5-minute voice memo and she was like, okay, cool, I'm good. And just went and opened it. And now her and her soon to be husband are taking a trip to St. Lucia on their honeymoon. They wanted a simple like 4 or 5 day redemption. They're flying direct from Charlotte and they use the points boost at one of the edit hotels. And they're like, hey, we're saving. And they had some city points now that transfer over to American, which is amazing. And they're saving like $5,000. And that was like a very easy redemption just based off of a welcome offer and, you know, them just saying, hey, we have 5 days. We don't want to, you know, do all the mental gymnastics. We're newer to this. Let's, you know, how do we do it? So yeah, no, great points. And I think I love your strategy with the city. That's something now with the American miles I'm thinking about, because with Charlotte being an American hub and being able to get to all those places, I've been booking on Qantas, British Airways with Capital One miles, just because it's like, hey, but the flight times aren't as good. So it's like, you got to figure out a strategy. And my wife always makes fun of me because she's like, yeah, I fly all the time for work. And she walks by and is like getting upgraded to first class. And I'm group 5 or 6 or 7 because I'm booking through the other partners. But I'm like, whatever, it's free. So I don't.
Right. Care. Yeah. So interestingly enough, I started using my Citi card as a daily driver before the points transfer to American. We earn a lot of American miles naturally for 2 reasons. A, that's who we primarily fly with. Unfortunately, I'm not at a major hub like you are, so I'm connecting anywhere in the world or anywhere in the country for the most part. But I always work hard to maintain my American Platinum Pro status every single year. And Taryn, she has a Basque bank account with American Airlines, and that's basically the high yield savings version. But instead of getting a high yield return, we actually get American Airlines miles every single month. And so you get, I think at this point now with rates, you get about 2 miles per dollar in the account for the year. So if you've got, as an example, $50,000 in the account, you'll get somewhere around 100,000 American Airlines miles for the year, but you get them monthly. So we have American Airlines miles just building up every single month on top of our spend, on top of our flying. And then we typically use the American Airlines portal or their hotel portal to continue to make sure we're getting loyalty points. So we've got a great American ecosystem already going. My city points, I'm actually building up just because it's more of an eclectic, refined taste of points, if you want to call it that. And their ability to transfer to, like, I prefer hotels. And with preferred hotels, actually, it's a 1-to-4 redemption. So one city thank you point transfers as 4 I prefer hotels. And those are a very smaller boutique line of luxury hotels. So I think it's really nice kind of having a different ecosystem in there. Because again, we earn a lot of Chase points, a lot of Amex points already, and city is really hard to earn outside of actual spend.
Yeah, no. And honestly, this is my favorite part about hosting the podcast, is I get to learn, but also I get to think through, like, okay, what are people that I know who listen also wanting to know? So, I mean, the majority of our listeners, right, since I'm from DC, are flying in and out of Reagan. Most now that I'm, you know, live in Charlotte, are flying out of Charlotte. So I kind of want to break down, if you don't mind, just going into, like, if someone isn't flying a ton for work, because I think I was a sales rep and I was flying, you know, 3-4 times a week. Now I don't. So we just mainly it's on personal. And like you said, the shopping portal is how I earn those. But through what you mentioned, the executive platinum pro status, can you kind of walk us through that piece? Can you also walk us through the bank, you know, the high yield savings account? That's a good one that I that I might get on here and take advantage of this weekend. I think those would be two good ones. And then just at a high level, like, what are some strategies that people could use just on their daily, you know, bookings through the portal?
Yeah, so I'll start with the Basque Bank. So this one's interesting. This is where, again, the analytics of being a financial advisor, of course, I would always advise people, like, talk to your financial advisor or do the math yourself to see if this makes sense. Because $50,000 as an example, and that used to be the limit. I think it's much higher now. You could actually put in there. But just using $50,000, it used to be 2.5x miles, but now it's just 2. And to be clear, these are American Airlines miles, not loyalty points. So you're not going to actually earn points towards status each month. But what I love about it is you're getting that 10,000 points per month, roughly, or let's just a little bit less, 8,000 points per month to get to about 100,000 for the year. And what's great about that is when you do the math, like, you could, let's say you have a high yield savings account. Right now, high yields are earning somewhere around 4% to, let's just call it 5%, right? Just for easy math. So 5% on $50,000 would be $2,500 that you would earn. Now, I'll make an argument that can compound over time. So there is some value there, but let's just simplify this, right? So $2,500 for the year. Now, you're going to have to pay taxes on that $2,500. You're going to get a 1099 INT for taxes on $2,500 of interest income. Well, that same 50K earning you 10,000 American Airlines miles for the year, we redeemed, I think, somewhere around 70,000 miles per person for Qatar Q Suites for a $10,000 ticket. Right, so 70,000 miles for $10,000 ticket, I got way more value out of my 50,000 sitting in Basque Bank than I would have if it was sitting in a high yield savings account, even if it was earning 5%, which they're not, most of them aren't earning that much now at this point. But here's the kicker. So I got more than $2,500 worth of value, but when that interest statement comes, I don't know the math on this, I don't know how they figure it out, but the interest income that they priced those points out at was like $100, right? So I only paid taxes on like $100 worth of interest versus what could have been $2,500, and I got $10,000 worth of value with even with less points, right? So that's where the math can really make sense. So don't quote me exactly on the $100 because I don't, yeah. But I remember, yeah, it was something like extremely small, like much less than 1,000. And I feel like it probably was exactly about $100. So that's where the math just can make sense. Now, should you put all of your money there? I would probably recommend not, right? Again, you have to be smart with your finances and how you do things. But for us, that strategy made sense. We have other investment accounts. We have real estate. We have other things that makes it make sense where we can park some funds here and get the points. Now, again, that's not compounded. So it would be in a different story if you had 50K growing in a high yield savings compounding each year. there is some additional value there, which we don't have to get into. But for me, to take a $10,000 plane ticket in luxury, popping champagne and everything else on a 12-hour flight, that's worth it for me.
100%. And that's when you asked me, like, what's your favorite, you know, redemption that you guys did on your honeymoon? I was like, Qatar Q Suites. Like, that, it is amazing. I mean, but that's, I like how you kind of broke that down, because it's specific to you. And I feel like when you're talking to different potential clients, you're like, hey, this isn't a one size fits all. This is what worked for our strategy. And yeah, I mean, for me, that's why I ask, because I'm thinking through, okay, like, I value, we have, you know, I have stuff compounding in the market. I have stuff compounding real estate, alternative assets. So for me, high yield savings, like, points are more valuable to me, because most of our money goes towards travel. So it's like, how do I maximize, right? If I'm spending and I have money already that I can tuck away. Now, that's an awesome strategy. What about Executive Platinum Pro? Just for people who are traveling, who are business owners, as well as just like, if someone's just hanging out at home, they're like, hey, I like to shop online, but I also like to come up with like simple strategies for booking hotels through the portal. Can you kind of walk us through just some high level ones there too?
Yeah. So with American Airlines, four status levels, there's a gold, there's platinum, platinum pro, and executive platinum. I push for platinum pro. I have never made it to executive platinum. I don't also plan to, because there's not a ton of extra perks that you get with executive platinum versus platinum pro, in my opinion. Platinum is pretty easy for me to get in a year. Platinum pro, it takes some effort for me, especially at the back end of the qualifying year, which for American Airlines goes through February of each year to qualify for. Well, so with American status in general, I'll just touch on what's great is, of course, there's upgrade opportunities, which is a lot harder depending on who you're flying through. I probably get upgraded more when I go through Charlotte than versus Dallas, right? I almost never ever get upgraded if I fly through Dallas, but Charlotte got good opportunities to do so. But when you're with gold, if you're gold status, you have the ability 24 hours before your flight, you can actually pick, if there's available, the preferred seating or the main cabin comfort. I forgot what it's called with American. Main cabin extra, I think it is. But you can actually move your seats to there for no cost. What I like about Platinum and Platinum Pro is when you book your flight, you can book a preferred seating right at the front of the plane, not for business class, but right behind it, which are the seats that have extra leg room. It's also the exit row, which is what I typically will always book, is the exit row, because the leg room is insanely huge, and you still get drinks, like alcoholic drinks and stuff like that on the flight included. So I love that aspect. You also get with Platinum Pro, so you get the same thing. You also get 3 checked bags for free with Platinum Pro, which is kind of ridiculous. It's kind of absurd. With Gold, you get 1. With Platinum, you get 2. And with Platinum Pro and Executive Platinum, you get 3. But one of the main reasons why I pushed for Platinum Pro specifically, there's 2 reasons actually. So the first one is Platinum Pro and Executive Platinum get you One World Emerald status, which is the highest status on One World flights or the One World Alliance. And some of the best business class lounges in the world are One World Emerald accessible only, unless you're actually flying business class with that airline. So I've heard one of the best ones is in Hong Kong, which we're excited to experience on our honeymoon. There's a bunch in Qatar and Doha, right? And so even if you're flying, even if you don't fly Qatar Q Suites, you can access some of these One World Emerald lounges just because you have One World Emerald status. You can fast track the lines with any of the One World Alliance partners. It's one of the best top tier alliance statuses that you can possibly have, and you get that with American Platinum Pro. And then the second reason why I got it was I wanted to be able to fast track to globalist status with Hyatt, because I had never hit the 60 nights before. And American, the last at least 5 years or so, they've had their basically status match challenge. So if you were American Gold or Platinum, you had 90 days once you triggered it. Whenever the window opened and you triggered it, you would have 90 days to complete 10 stays at a Hyatt property. So they would give you Hyatt Explorer status, which is the second highest, for 90 days. And if you completed a 10-night stay in those 90 days, you would keep Hyatt status for the rest of the year and the following year as well, which is nice. Well, I was already Hyatt Explorer. If you're Platinum Pro or higher, so at Platinum Pro or Executive Platinum, you have the same opportunity, but you have the opportunity to extend up to 20 days. So if you complete 20 nights in a 90-day period, then you get Globalist. So that's a wait opportunity to fast track to Globalist within 90 days. So by having Platinum Pro, the very first time I did it, the following year, I was able to do a mattress run 20 days in 90. When it wasn't all together, it was broken up, but that gave me Globalist for the first time, which was amazing. And then I've now been working towards just hitting Globalist either between spend with my Hyatt card, night stays, travel, trips, all those other things. So those are kind of the major benefits with Platinum Pro specifically that I found of it valuable. There's not really a ton of extra value you get with Executive Platinum, and it takes like 75,000 more loyalty points to hit Executive Platinum, which is a lot of work, unless you're actively a business flyer or something along those lines.
Yeah. No, we could have done this whole podcast episode on breaking that down. That was awesome. And I mean, we love flying American. We love, you know, staying in Hyatts because, right, we have a ton of Chase points. And just understanding that, I think for people who, you know, or higher business owner spenders, or who people who are, you know, they want to keep it simple and they fly out of a big hub like Charlotte that is American. It's like, what are some of those strategies? And that's the thing is a lot of people always ask, like, well, I don't have all these different businesses, or, you know, I don't spend that much money. So it's just trying to find strategic ways of how can we get people, just personally get people into it so they can travel more, but also for business owners, how do they maximize those miles? And what are some just simple strategies that you use as a business owner? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're super busy. You're juggling, right, a ton of things, but at the same time, you're prioritizing travel and just putting systems, processes, you know, in place and just getting started. That's how, when people are like, how are you guys always on top of your stuff? It's just like, you just do it once, you get better at it. And then once you have those systems and understand those things, you just keep it rolling. So now I appreciate that background, and I plan on doing a little work this week and getting potentially setting that. What's the minimum amount you have to put into the bank account to open it? Do you know? And I can look it up and share it.
Yeah. So it used to be before, I think the minimum was like 10K and the max was 50. Okay. I believe it now, and I could be wrong, this could have updated, but last we had looked at it, I think the minimum now might be 50 and the max is 200. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that was the case last I checked. But of course, that's always changing on their site. But I believe that's what it was. Because also, as high yields have come down, it was, again, at the peak, it was 2.5x miles. And so we were getting on 50K, that means we would get somewhere around 120. Yeah, we were getting about 10,000 miles a month, but now it's down to 2. So we're getting about 100,000 miles for the year.
Gotcha. That's still great. Hey, if Taryn has a plug, who can get me in for 10K? Let me know.
Got it. We'll see what we can do.
I love it.
And I also wanted to say also for someone that's trying to hit American Airlines status, so gold is the minimum, only 40K loyalty points needed for that. And I know you had asked about this, I didn't really touch on it, but there are the shopping portals and the American Airlines hotel portal as well, or Advantage Hotels. And without going too long into either of these, so the American Airlines shopping portal works like Rakuten, if you've ever talked about that. So you can go and use it. And if you're spending stuff at Dell or whatever online, different places, you can earn loyalty points just through your shopping online. But the hotel route is amazing because if you're traveling somewhere, for example, we're looking at our honeymoon's going to be, part of it's going to be in New Zealand. There's a lot of hotels in New Zealand that aren't Hyatt or Hilton or IHG or whatever it may be. So these are like boutique or regular hotels that are just their own independent property. Those are perfect properties to use on like the American Airlines Advantage hotels, because it's basically like booking through Expedia or something like that. But instead you get American Airlines loyalty points. And if you have an American Airlines credit card, it's like 10X. And I have an American Airlines credit card. And so I've done bookings where one two-night stay will get me 10 to 12,000 American Airlines loyalty points, right? And you only need 40 for gold status. So just a couple stays throughout the year, a couple flights throughout the year, you can hit gold pretty easily. Platinum takes a little bit more work, and Platinum Pro takes some strategy beyond that. But again, you can at least hit gold pretty easily. And there you go, free check back, which you can also get with a credit card by itself. But that ability to get those preferred seats 24 hours before check-in with gold, at least, is a nice perk as well, if you can't book it from the get-go.
That's awesome. Yeah, we both have the American Airlines card. I've used the portal somewhat, but a lot of the times we've stayed on points, or if we've done bigger group trips, it's Airbnbs. But that's good to know, because sometimes, you know, if there isn't a great redemption hotel where we're wanting to stay. I mean, boutique hotels. We stayed, I think, at one on our honeymoon, and it was amazing. So I'm definitely going to take advantage. And I know that's a lot of people are definitely interested in that. Just from a, I mean, I would love to hear a little bit more. We talked a little bit about the real estate side of things, you know, furnishing, keeping that stuff going is pretty easy. But just from, I think what I want to touch on a little bit is going back to that 3% fee, just based on your experience, right? How have you, when you guys have, you know, bought a rental property, if you've paid a GC or furnished them, like, could you just walk through a quick and easy just strategy you guys have created?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple. It all honestly comes back down to the same thing I said before on just getting the value on the redemption side. So I understand water damage because I had a triplex that basically the whole bottom, some grease backed up in a grease trap, whatever it may be, bottom got flooded, ended up having to bring in a restoration company. And long story short, it was about, I think, $9,000 worth of work that was needed, and insurance was actually going to pay for it. And so what was interesting is, of course, I got the check from insurance, but I put it on a card anyway. And the general contractor or the restoration company said, hey, it's going to be a 3% fee. I was like, no worries, no brainer. That 3% charge, right, that's going to be a business write-off. Insurance covered the rest of it. And so I went ahead and utilized the card for that purpose. If I needed to furnish, I have an Airbnb that's in Tulum, in Mexico. If I have expenses or need to buy things for that on Amazon, I get stuff shipped to Mexico, whatever it may be, or furnishings. My property manager down there, it used to be I had to actually, that was the one thing I couldn't pay my property manager on credit card, but just recently they ended up switching to, they have a US bank account. They can actually send me a PayPal invoice now, which is great. So I can use a card to actually pay for those expenses. And then most recently, that same triplex that I just mentioned had the grease issue. I just sold that a few months ago. And at closing, you know, you have to go through the inspections and there was some stuff that needed to be repaired. I had two vendors for the repairs. I made sure my realtor asked both of them, hey, he wants to not run this through closing. Because most people would say, hey, I don't want to, you know, if I got $10,000 worth of repairs that need to be done, they could easily have that come out of the closing dollars and they would just get less at closing. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to pay this specifically on my credit card. Can you make sure to figure out a way to make that happen? Well, both vendors agreed to that. And one did charge me a 3% fee, but the other actually didn't, which was great. And so if I just had never asked and just assumed, okay, this is the process and I have to go paying them out through closing, which is how 95% of people probably do it, well, I would have lost out the opportunity to earn $10,000 worth of spend on points. And I didn't have a specific welcome offer. I didn't get a new card for that specifically. I could have. Well, I didn't. But just knowing that that was opportunity, and both of those charges, I used a Chase Business Unlimited card that earns 1.5x. That's a perfect example of a $10,000 charge. I earned 15,000 points for it. I know I'm going to get somewhere around probably $300 to $600 worth of value out of those 15,000 points.
That's awesome. My wheels are turning because I'm in the process of going through that. And I'm just like looking at, okay, where can I maximize this? If we're going on a trip next year, which I am surprising my wife here in a few days with a trip to South Africa for a safari. She has no idea, and this will air later. So
later, love it. Absolutely love it.
She probably won't listen, but but I'm already thinking through like, okay, cool. We got enough, you know, Chase, Capital One points to get there, you know, probably going to get an Amex, and then that could, we might have a wedding in Portugal next year, and then we're going to go to Turks and Caicos and some other stuff, which if you guys haven't gone to Turks, you guys got to check it out. There's a new Hyatt that's opening there, which is amazing.
I did see that. I've been to Grand Turk. I've been there on a cruise. I've never stayed in Turks and Caicos.
Okay. Yeah. It's right near Grace Bay. We love it. We've been back. We're doing a group trip there next year. But no, that's super helpful, man. I guess last, just to keep our listeners inspired, right? Inspired, you know, what's one aspirational trip you guys have done? And right, how'd you book it on points? Just to show listeners what's possible.
So one of my more aspirational trips, and I feel like I keep going above. I keep saying, oh, this is the most aspirational we've done, and then we keep going bigger. So like our honeymoon's going to be a month that's going to be absolutely insane. That's coming up here in December. It's going to be wild. But for one that we've actually already done and completed, so we've been to the Maldives twice, and I'm looking at my notes as I talk through this. So the first time I went to the Maldives, we had spent $4,600. We used 393,000 points, and our total value was $42,000. So spent $4,600, got $42,000 worth of value. So that's almost a 10 cent redemption. So 9.6 specifically. The second time, and I'll break this one down in more detail. The second time, which was last year, Thanksgiving, we splurged a little bit because for this one, we flew Qatar Q Suites on the way there. So Qatar Q Suites, we spent 140,000 points and $200. And so that was a real cost of $20,500. So that ended up being a 14.5 cent redemption on just that flight alone. That was from New York to Qatar. And here's the thing. Part of the factor here is we had to still fly from Norfolk to New York and stay overnight as well to make, so we had to do a positioning flight because, you know, I want to make sure that we don't miss that flight, yeah, right? Yeah. So we flew in a day or the night before, make sure we had to stay there in case there was any issues with travel or whatever it may be. So flew from JFK to Doha. And oh, I forgot to mention, we used points to stay at the Hyatt Regency JFK at Resorts World, by the way. And then once we got to Qatar, we stayed overnight at the Hyatt Regency in Qatar by the airport. Oh, sorry, it's a Grand Hyatt. And then we took American Airlines miles to fly from Doha to the Malé. Malé is the main airport in the Maldives. That was only 35,000 American Airlines miles, and that would have been $2,000 cash for the one way. We only spent $74 out of pocket for that. And then on the way back, so while we were in the Maldives, we actually were on a liveaboard. We did a bunch of diving, so that was all cash paid for like 8 days. On the way back, we flew Emirates. And so this was really cool. This was probably one of my highlights, I think, personally from a travel standpoint. So we flew from Malé in total to JFK. So it was a nice connection all through Emirates. This one was a splurge because we paid $1,200 cash per person for the one way, and in total about 276,000 points for both of us. So that itself was only almost an 8 cent redemption. But on the flight from Malé to Dubai, which was a 5 hour leg, I went up to the counter and I said, hey, do you have any availability from business class to first class upgrades? They did. That upgrade only costed us about 30,000 points per person and $60 cash per person. So here was what was great about that. That gave us Emirates first class, and we did that at the airport. So I'm literally sitting at the check-in counter. There's a line behind me, and I had my iPad open, and I transferred my points from Amex to Emirates while standing at the counter and said, hey, you should see my points now. Go ahead and upgrade us. I've heard horror stories. someone, I guess, I think you're probably going to have in the future, Julia, where she did the exact same thing, and her points took like 4 days to get there. Yeah. For whatever reason, mine actually hit instantly. So we got Emirates first class. I say fortunately, unfortunately, but it's still fortunately because this is first world problems. It was on the 777 instead of the A380. So the A380 is the one that's got the shower in the front in first class. The 777 does not. But still, we had unlimited Dom. We had caviar. the ceiling of the plane lights up as stars at night. Like it's absolutely incredible. And that alone was an 11 cent redemption for the value of that upgrade versus what we actually paid in points. So in its entirety, that trip, we used 551,000 points, spent $4,100, and it would have been $56,000.
That's wild. But but how you broke it down just shows, I mean, not everyone's great, right? You've been doing this for so long where you've just over time have picked up, hey, here's these strategies, here's some tips and tricks. And, you know, you knew not everyone's going to know, I need to go to the front, do the Emirates change with Amex. That's how usually you're going to get upgraded. And there are some last minute things sometimes to get those, but That's amazing, man. That's why I love listening to your podcast. That's why I just enjoy learning, because you know you're taking it to the next level and making those aspirational trips just very attainable if you're doing all the right things. So it's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And I got to be honest with your listeners, right? This isn't a day one redemption, yeah. Right? That's not something that someone that's been listening to your podcast for a couple of months is going to typically be able to pull off. It's very doable, but that's not something that I would advise someone to try to go for from the get-go, right? So start small, do your first redemption, get used to what it's like to transfer points, all those different things, because a strategy like that, because then we've done Maldives twice like that, we've done Bali, we've done Singapore, where we go literally the other side of the world. In the future, we've got Hong Kong, Singapore, Fiji, that's coming up. So my point to this is, it logistically can be a nightmare. And for instance, it's just me and my fiance, and we have no plans to have kids. If it was a family of four, you're probably not going to want to do positioning flights and bouncing around and doing all the things, having multiple layovers and stops like we are willing to do, because it's just the two of us. There's a lot of things you have to take into consideration on, like, what makes the most sense for you and your family for the travel that you're specifically trying to do. Because if you have little ones in tow, that's going to be a lot harder. For us, it's nothing for us to spend an extra night in JFK. You know, I own my own business. Taryn both has her own business and works part-time and works remotely. So we have the flexibility to take these longer trips to be able to stretch out how we travel, how we get back. And that's why most of our travels are planned around literally what's the best day to leave and the best day to come back. Yeah. Our honeymoon's a month. Not because we said, oh, we're going to take a month for a honeymoon. It's because the literal best way I found to get to, because it was supposed to be Fiji and New Zealand specifically, was to get to Fiji, was to go through Hong Kong. And the literal best day to do that was a specific day in December. And then while we were planning our route back from New Zealand, I had already booked a trip that was actually going to be like late January, and then I got a points alert that was going to be like through Singapore and rerouting, and then I got a points alert direct flight on Qantas Air that's going to be from Auckland, New Zealand, straight to DFW, and I was like, okay, we're absolutely taking this. And that was like the best way, fastest way to get back, least amount of points, biggest bang for our buck. And when you look at the starting date and the ending date, it just happened to be a month. And so nice. That's how we were able to figure that out.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that transparency. And I think that's what a lot of people do too, because it isn't just going back to what we talked about at the beginning. It's not a one size fits all. It's, you know, that's what, when you're working with people, it's understanding what are their goals? What are they spending a lot of their money on? What's their time? Because people with school schedules are going to have a different time than, you know, we do at the moment with no kids. So it's like, you have to take all those into factor. But if you do have that flexibility, you know, because a lot of people say, oh, points don't work, this and that. It's just, no, sometimes you got to take a positioning flight, because if you're trying to fly from Mississippi to Hong Kong, right, you're probably not going to get a direct flight. You're going to have to fly to a JFK or to, right, a Chicago or somewhere that's going to get you there. Yeah, it's a great breakdown and great way to end. I appreciate you coming on. This was super valuable. I learned a ton. I know our listeners will learn a ton. Where can our listeners go to find you on your socials, as well as if they want to, you know, work with you, do any of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So from a travel standpoint, so our podcast is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. It is on all platforms as well as YouTube. We do have a separate YouTube channel that's more of our vlog style of like the trips that we do, got the drone footage, the drone shots, and that's Boldly Go Travels. As well as on Instagram, our handle is boldlygo.world, and that's pretty much our handle everywhere. That's our website as well, boldlygo.world. And on our YouTube podcast page, it's just Boldly Go World, no period in there. So that's all the ways to connect with us. And then on the flip side, for financial planning, Truicity Wealth Management, the website for that is just truicitywealth.com. And you can, if it's easier, just pull up my name. You'll find the practice, the information. You'll see our ranking on Forbes. You'll see all that stuff. If anyone wants to research me and the financial planning side, happy to help on that side. But from a travel standpoint, Boldly Go is the brand, and boldlygo.world is how you can find everything.
Awesome. Well, yeah, and listeners, we'll link everything DeAndre just mentioned in the show notes. That way it's just easier for you to go in and click. And again, appreciate you coming on. And listeners, if this is your first time checking us out, make sure you hit that follow or subscribe. That way you don't miss any upcoming episodes. Make sure you share it with a family or friend. That way they can start to travel more on points, hopefully. And also give us a 5-star review. You know, I think DeAndre deserves one for sure today. So appreciate everyone tuning in. We will see you next week.
Take care.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at VoiceScape.com.